Today on the show, Radical Ones, you don't need to be big to be a hero. It's 1997's Mouse Hunt.
He snapped the trap, ate the olive, and left the pit just to mock us.
I think you're giving him a little too much credit.
It's time to get radical.
Hello there.
It's showtime.
What is this, trick-or-treat?
Good morning,
Charlie. Sailor
Moon, the champion of justice.
Deal with it.
Daddy would have gotten us Uzis.
The power is yours.
Get down, honey, get down.
And look, I won't go far, okay? If the apocalypse comes,
beat. Hold your fire. I'm a My human.
My name is Grace Jones.
Thunder.
Power 3 will set us free.
Power 3 will set us free.
But I'm one to gossip, so if anyone asks you, you ain't heard from me.
No,
you have.
No more room in hell. The dead will walk here.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo!
Welcome back, Radical Ones, to another episode of the Radical Retro Rewind Podcast. As always, I am your host, Radical Ryan Hunter, here with Rob, the movie geek himself, for a new episode. Hello, Rob.
Hi, Ryan. Welcome back, everyone.
So here we are in another December. Rob, I had no memory of this movie, what we're doing today. Technically, a Christmas movie or a holiday movie?
I don't know if it would be classified as either. I think that because of the mention of Christmas, it could be perceived as a holiday film. But yeah, I forgot that Christmas was mentioned. I guess it kind of takes place around that time.
Hey, Merry Christmas.
But it looks like it kind of goes into the new year, given the timeline. So it can go either way. The snow, we saw some of it, but not all of it. I mean, it was kind of in the movie. There wasn't a lot of mention of Christmas. So I don't know if I would put it in that category, but it is something that you can watch. You know, I look at Christmas as an opportunity to watch horror films and dark comedies all the time. So it would be a perfect Christmas movie for me.
I was just going to ask you, it is a dark comedy then.
It is a very dark comedy, black comedy, whichever you want to call it. There's humor in here that is fit for a cartoon, but because it's done to humans, it looks painful and people would clearly die from it. There's a lot of adult themes, but yet it's still a family-friendly slapstick movie that I think, you know, younger, you know, audiences can enjoy. So yeah, the dark comedy definitely fits.
So we are, of course, talking about Mouse Hunt, which came out on December 19th of 1997. What a time to be alive, Rob.
Right.
I did the math off camera. 12 for me. I was around 12 years old for this. So this I saw in the theaters, but that was it, Rob. Never again.
Oh, I love this movie. I'm trying to remember if I bought the VHS. It sounds familiar that it was in my collection at some point. And I thought I owned it, but I didn't. But thankfully, I don't know how you watched it. Okay.
Same way, yeah.
So yeah, we were able to watch it on Prime. When this comes out, unfortunately, it will be gone. But we caught it for free, so yay for us. Sorry about it.
After the viewing, I wouldn't have mind paying like a rental for this because it was actually a pleasant surprise.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I have fond memories of this movie. It's the type of children's film that I enjoy watching. Not that I despise any other type, but this is top tier for me. I love stuff like this, and we'll be doing another one just like it later on this year or next year. Yeah, I love this type of comedy. It's great.
Are you a Lemony Snicket person then?
You know what's funny? I'm not familiar with the books.
Oh, me either.
I have seen the movie and I've seen most of the Netflix series. It's very Tim Burton-esque, so I think it follows under that category.
True.
And that's where I get a lot of my... Lemony Snicket has a lot of dry humor, which sometimes goes over my head. But I do have appreciation for the cinematography and stuff like that. I love its backdrops, you know. So yeah, that's stuff is good too. What I'm talking about with this movie, and this will also kind of come in when we get to the recommendations as well. This follows under, do you know what a Rube Goldberg machine is?
No idea.
You'll know it when I describe it to you, but okay. this is what it's known for. So it's a complex contraption designed to complete a simple task. So just think about when Pee Wee Herman's Big Adventure. Remember that machine to make his breakfast?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
That is a Rube Goldberg machine. It's just okay. A contraption. Yeah.
Like that makes sense.
It does something to do something else, and then it just does this thing. So it's a machine. It's to set tasks that work in succession and triggers one event after the other. So you've seen them all around.
This is technically, dare I say, mouse trap again? Like, is that considered like that contraption because you have to set something off to do the next?
Exactly. So with the machine, there's usually gadgets and mechanics to hold it together. But when you look at a movie like this, you can also put it in the same category as like the Final Destination movie. You know how one thing triggers one to do another? It's just this sort of like destiny, fate sort of thing. Like everything is just in its place, right? And that is what I love about this movie, is just designed and choreographed to just cause so much chaos in the most organized way.
Ooh.
Yeah, I just really enjoy this type of stuff. So this movie is literally that. And I just appreciate just how it was all just put together.
When I'm reading like little people's reviews of this and their takes, a few of them said it's almost what you said, that it's so tight in a way that the plot, like the Cuban cigar box, comes back. Mm-hmm. Plot lines from earlier on are just so tightly put into this plot. Truly, like, geniusly.
Yeah, everything, there's a reason for everything. Everything fits, like, just, you know, with the cockroach in the beginning, shutting down his business. Like, it all just fell into this, like, fate-like thing. And I just love stuff like that. I mean, I completely forgot. So there's a part in the movie where one of the brothers is a renowned chef, and he has this very pristine restaurant. The mayor is eating at his restaurant. It's all televised. And the box that they inherited from his father ended up having a cockroach in it and made it into the restaurant onto the mayor's plate. The mayor eats half of it, or almost eats half of it. And because of the shock, he dies.
Crunchy. Of the omens.
And this is a children's movie.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was kind of like, oh, wow. This is like a really dark kids movie. But those twins were just... twins menacing. Of the mayor. Crazy.
Very menacing. So I'll go on record and say, even rewatching it, I was reminded as to why it's one of my favorites. I think it's a wonderful film. It's so funny. The simplistic storyline of just catching a little mouse turned into this 90-minute movie of some of the best slapstick in the game. I just love the fact that it's a black comedy. It's just, this movie would never be made today.
I don't think audience would even have the attention span in a way for it, because it's different.
Lars, give me a hand with this.
The Smuts brothers have inherited their father's old house.
Sorry, Pop, I'm sorry!
Fixing it up could bring them a fortune.
We can make 700,000 easy.
Oh, man. Smart.
Our future is staring us in the face, and all we have to do is grab it, baste it, and scarf it down.
There's just one small problem.
Hello.
Hello.
DreamWorks Pictures proudly presents Nathan Lane.
We need a cat.
I'm talking... one mean pussy.
Lee Evans.
Here I go!
And Christopher Walken as Caesar the Exterminator.
It's just a mouse.
I don't think we'll be seeing any more of that.
If he snaps one of these babies, one of them has to nab him.
Mouse Hunt.
The film is described as, it follows two Laurel and Hardy like brothers in their struggle against one small but crafty house mouse for the possession of a mansion which was willed to them by their father. And we have two distinct brothers, but I feel like by the end, I don't know if it's the whole thing that ties them together, but they come together and have like a similar goal in mind.
Well, I just want to highlight the cast, but really give flowers to Nathan Lane and Lee Evans. Like, their comedic timing, you know, just their zany physical acting comedy. And just really going after it. They just really let it all out. I hope they were having fun filming this. You know, you got some scenes where they're in the suits and they're very, you know, like they're, you know, they're just dignified, you know, they're businessmen. And then when it comes to this mouse, they are the most wackiest human being, just going completely insane throughout the whole movie. But it's just their way of just rolling with the punches. I don't know how much of that was really them as far as stunts, but I just thought those two did such an amazing job, and their chemistry together I thought was great. They definitely looked like they were brothers. And as you were saying, the sort of Laurel Hardy, Abbott and Costello sort of thing too, it also gives me Bert and Ernie. And it's just this physical presence of somebody who is sort of short and a little doughy versus the tall skinny. It's Natasha and Boris. And you know that sort of thing. Morticia and Gomez, all of that, it just fits that style. And I just think the casting of that, and hopefully it was intentional, I just love how it all fits. I really appreciate them. They really held this movie. Nathan Lane is just a gem. Yeah, I just thought it was fantastic. So I really like them.
What a legacy.
Spoons! Spoons! So many spoons, so little time.
By the way, this was DreamWorks Pictures' first family comedy, but also their second movie ever made after The Peacemaker in 1997, which was released just a few months earlier. Okay, so do you know the only thing I remembered about this movie is the mouse, the actors, and the string aspect. So this was a completely blank check. I mean, even down to the opening credits when they're deceased father
goes down the sewer. Yeah. I mean, what a way to set the tone. Like, this is the kind of stupidity you are going to get for 90 minutes. You know, you got the brothers bickering. They clearly don't agree with each other. They just lost their father. I mean, it's starting off very bleak. And then, bam, here's the comedy. Let's just show you. Laws of gravity have been suspended. We are just going to do whatever we want. And God bless them. Hopefully, it was not to any disrespect to our late departed William Hickey, who is a legend.
Ooh, I want you to have something, my most prized possession.
Oh, it's a piece of string.
Not just any string. The string. I found it my first day in America.
What's with the string?
It's been in my pocket for 60 years here. I want you two to share it. Maybe it'll bring you closer together.
This was his very last role.
Very fitting, too. I get, you know, like a legacy of having him live on after his death.
Sure thing, sure thing. I mean, he's been in so many great movies, even TV. His presence was definitely throughout the movie, and he held his own. I don't know exactly how ill he was during the making of this, but this man stood ground, said all of his lines, and got through it. And the man is amazing.
So his character, he plays their father, Rudolph. And I got this during the film at some points. Is it supernatural? Is the father... He can't be a reincarnation, because this mouse, we've heard now, has done this to multitude of people, locked them in a trunk.
Exactly.
So is there, though, something supernatural, you
there
think?
There is a little bit of sort of miracle or destiny.
Okay, yes,
right? Destiny. Like the serendipitous stuff. I don't know if he was foreseeing their future with, you know, how it ended, but there is definitely some kind of force being played. Everything matters. Everything is happening for a reason. That sort of mentality.
Yes.
As far as a supernatural element, I just think it's a little just quirky and silly. I mean, to be fair, the mouse breaks the fourth wall a couple of times.
Oh, yes.
The mouse is seen looking at the screen. So, I mean, I don't think there's magic in their world. world. I just think the movie's a little meta and just knows that it's meta. Silly.
So along the film just being in its own world as well, for the longest time until modern things were finally brought up, I'm like, wait, is this movie in 1940s? The mobsters even, by the way, Mario Cantone.
Loved that.
The straightest I've ever heard him in my life.
Zepco International has been interested in your factory for years, but your father refused to sell.
We're hoping you would be a little smarter.
Zepco is willing to buy you out and bring this museum into the 21st century. Of course, we would keep you on as a string consultant with a huge salary and a hefty pension.
I completely forgot he was in this movie. That was amazing. Mario Cantone. Mostly, well, I shouldn't say mostly, but he is a very renowned comedian, but you would probably see him to be associated with Sex and the City. That's where I know him from. And yeah, I can't believe he was in this. That was funny. Again, another short to tall ratio buddy pairing,
exactly.
Him and his partner.
Exactly. But just the style of everything. And it gives this movie its own flair because it looks like the 40s, but it's not. Or it's the 50s, but it's not.
I do love the choice with that. Yes, I was gonna bring that up. You know, the movie, you know, came out in 97, but yet this old style look and just its old fashioned way of like the economy and, you know, just making money, making a name for yourself, all of it was very yes. old school. You know, we didn't have cell phones in this movie, none of that was really present. It was sort of like a mixture, but I think the design and again cinematography, just the way that it was, you know, presented, I think deserves sort of that old fashioned look. I mean, just the String Factory alone being
the String Factory
center, you know, is, I don't know, I just thought that was a really nice touch to add to this.
I leave you not just a model factory, but something infinitely more valuable. The future of string itself.
There's a switch in this movie. Midway, would you say, into the movie? I mean, it's after it's established that the brothers, you know, the factory is broken. Now they've inherited this house. All of a sudden, we get that fourth wall breaking or not, but whatever, like that zoom in of not only does this mouse live here, he's got his own house. He has a beautiful postcard wall, a bed. That's where I feel like the children's element, like children would be like, yes, at this part.
I noticed the mouse was given, you know, human-like features, emotion. There was definitely an underdog story. We didn't get any backstory, but it was clear that the mouse also had inspiration, aspirations and dreams of his own. You know, he's looking at a poster of Hawaii and sort of dreams of going there or just something tropical. Like he, you know, like the mouse also has, you know, like thoughts beyond this house too. And so as I was watching it as well, I couldn't really figure out who was the hero and who was the villain of this
yes.
story, because just the locking of people in chess in the attic is very dark. I don't know. I mean, the mouse definitely was just trying to live, right?
Right.
But at the same time, it's like you are strategic. I mean, this mouse was clearly intelligent beyond, you know, comprehension of how animals usually think and operate. Like there was purpose. And so I didn't know who I was supposed to be rooting for, because even though these two brothers wanted to kill a mouse, you know, I'm sure everyone doesn't want mice around them. And they were just down on their luck. They lost everything. They weren't horrible people. So it was really hard to know, like, who is supposed to be winning here. And while it all worked out, I just didn't know who the villain was, you know?
We finally found our friend's home. Well, I bought a little present for you, buddy.
So I had that same struggle because, you know, in the beginning, Nathan Lane's character is played as the more, you know, serious, the one that, yes, exact, cynical, perfect word. And Lee Evans' character has this more, we got to stay together. But then there is this switch that they get almost like they're so gleefully, they want to kill this mouse so badly. So you do have that struggle. But to me, I'll say the redeeming thing is they didn't have the heart to kill the mouse themselves. Although normally if you mail a mouse in a box, you know, and then ship it back and forth, probably wouldn't survive. But
like immediately when he's like, I can't kill the mouse, but then he's like, oh, did I forget to poke holes in the box? And he's laughing so menacing.
Oh, I forgot to put holes in the box.
Well, okay, so, well, I shouldn't say this is the elephant in the room, but let's just really break this down. Is this mouse really a big deal?
No.
In just the grand scheme of things, no. Of this, like, is it? But, you know, you have to think, like, why are we all scared of mice if we see them in our home? Now, for me, I just have this fear they're going to enter my holes and my body.
Yes, yeah.
Like... They don't, yes. Like, mice don't give a shit, but it's just the idea that they do carry around parasites and diseases, yes. And things, like, we don't want to be near them. I mean, I don't think by the physical touch, like, bam, that's it, but at the same time, it's like, we're not meant to cohabitate if they're from the streets, you know? And so, what are you supposed to do? But it was just this overall mission to just kill this mouse instead of getting rid of it. But don't you love the fact that the mouse would easily go outside casually and be like, oh, make myself, I'll gladly get back in the house. I'm not even worried about
exactly.
It. Like, I there mean, were so many moments where the mouse actually made it out of the house, but yet it had to die because there was no way there was going to be any cohabitation. Like, you can't help but just want to get rid of it. Nobody's going to buy property if it's infested.
Before they fixed that house up, that was, to me, the least of their issues, because I guarantee you in real life that would have roaches, that would have spiders, every horrible thing. And much like the movie we did in the summer with the Momoya house, where you just go on these sheets and these beds that have been in goodness knows alone, probably what you could have gotten from the mold and the sheets and all that stuff. Like, the mouse was the least of it, but you're right. But they got so many outs too at some point that it's, is it become greed because they wanted to, I mean, honestly, who else would, I mean, make more money on the house? But there was one point where they could have gotten this out before they even fixed it up, I feel like, right? Mm-hmm. And they found it was a LaRue house.
Yeah.
Thanks to the mouse.
It's just a mouse. What? It's just a mouse. Never mind. Hey, there's some posters up here. Stand still.
Which, again, it's like that divine, like you were saying earlier, or it's just meant to be, this has to happen for this, to this, to this. They had the out there. He was willing to give them, what, $10 million? Right then, you know, don't worry about it. Although, to me, he had the best line of the movie with the shoes. This wrong.
My favorite. Yeah.
These shoes, LaRue? No, but I'm sure he'd love them.
Loved them, yeah.
Made me laugh. I rewound it twice.
I'll get to the point. LaRue, I have his books. I have his letters. Do you see these shoes?
LaRue's?
No, but I'm sure he would have loved them.
It was the adult humor for me. Like, when they were describing what kind of cat they wanted.
Oh my god! Okay, Catzilla, yes. That
yeah, indeed. You know the line I'm talking about.
Oh,
I can't believe they got away with that. That was hilarious.
So we really need a ferocious feline, preferably with a history of mental illness. I'm talking one mean pussy.
Yeah.
Speaking of the cat, so the mouse, if you guys haven't seen it, so there was an actual mouse that did most of the work. You know, obviously they have trained mice to like go from one end to the other as far as filming. But then there were times where they definitely needed to use CGI for even the cat that was chasing him. It was very, you know, Tom and Jerry. But it was, again, the mouse being able to do sort of cartoon or human-like things. Like he would go around stacking food on top of his head while he was running.
The wheel of cheese.
Yeah, the wheel of cheese. But just also, just given the size of, you know, the humans in the film versus this mouse, like, I really enjoy some of the shots they did, as you know, when they were doing a lot of the chase scenes. There was real stakes and there was a real, yes, like, versus competition. It, you know, anytime they would go to somebody else and be like, don't underestimate this mouse, he is vicious, and it lived up to that. But of course, it's all tied down to how bumbling these two are together.
Exactly.
Right, like, if they were just a little bit more coordinated, they would have gotten that mouse out of there. Like, but it was the fact that they kept hitting themselves, very Three Stooges, like, that's where the fun starts, and I love that about the movie.
Like you said, don't underestimate the mouse. One of them was Caesar the Exterminator, which was Christopher Walken, and the fact that he just knew mouse. Like, it's the mouse.
Love it. I love it. It was giving John Goodman arachnophobia. Like, these exterminators do not play. They love their work.
What is it?
The big one.
It's a flea bomb.
Looks on mice, too.
Yeah? Well, it better. Because we can't handle any more intrusions.
Sure? That's how you perceive it. But to that mouse, you are the intruder.
To see him with just like this black hair too, just looking so young. Can you believe? And I just love actors who are like known for their seriousness and clearly Oscar-worthy performances, but then they can like just chill for a second and play an exterminator in a children's film.
Exactly.
I love that crap so much. I love Walken for being able to do that. I just thought it was fun.
And it was memorable. I mean, it's a small little thing. I mean, his mobile, his driving car alone was very memorable. I don't want to forget to not mention him. Michael Jeter, of course, he was in Jurassic Park 3, but let's not forget that he was Sister in Act Sister 2. Act 2.
Exactly. He is so Sister Act 2.
I was going to say, this is Sister Act. This is Father Ignatius?
I think so, yeah.
I forgot he was in Jurassic Park 3, and I'm like, wait, he's also in Jurassic Park 3 with the guy with the gun, the plane. Had to mention him in this movie.
Yeah, RIP to you too, buddy. Yeah, he's great. He's great. Great actor.
Did you love the body that Lee Evans was giving, Rob?
Oh, yes. In fact, like, Lee Evans... Lee Evans is, he's a good looking man. Yes, but he was definitely serving he's looking very fit, in my opinion.
12-year-old Ryan, for some reason, did not remember that, but.
No, I was living for that. And again, to Lee Evans, like, comedic genius, do you remember that he was in There's Something About Mary?
He was in that movie.
He was the guy with cerebral palsy, and he was he was trying to get, you know, her affections as well, but he had those, and just the way he was working with the crutches and stuff, that's all Lee Evans, man. He is so good.
Underrated, then, or unless...
Was he involved in any of the Monty Python movies? Was he ever associated with that?
He should have been.
I feel like he would fit in with that group so perfectly, but he's great. But yeah, he looked pretty good. I'm not gonna lie.
He does an American accent. He sounds pretty... Mm-hmm. I'm assuming this is supposed to be New York.
I know, yeah. It kind of looks like New York, right? Something Boston, Mass... Something like that.
Yeah, it's like that generic city, metropolis.
Would you look at that? Sleeping on the street. Pitiful.
If I had a house, I'd sleep in it.
Ernie, do you remember how close we were as kids?
No. Hey, Merry Christmas.
Comic Book Club News gives you the comic book news you need to know first thing in the morning every weekday in the form of digestible 3 to 5 minute long podcasts. Comic Book Club News recaps breaking news stories from Marvel, DC Comics, and beyond, Monday through Friday. New episodes drop 6 a.m. ET in the Comic Book Club News feed, so they're ready for you when you're ready for the day. Comic Book Club News. You hear it second or third, possibly fourth.
So that Catzilla scene, never want to go to this pound, Radical Ones. They were gassing the cats. They were tasing them. But this cat didn't come out of a box for I forgot how long. And great scenes, too, with this cat. That has to have been a puppet, right, at some parts?
Yeah. There's actually some behind-the-scenes stuff that you can watch on YouTube that kind of shows the mechanics and everything about the cat. Good. It was really great. If I'm not mistaken, the guy who was running the City Pound, he is the voice of Ed on Lion King. So there's that, like, reunion reference there, too.
Lion King reunion, in a way. With Nathan
I could
Lane
be wrong.
Well.
From what I remember, because for a long time I thought it was Pumbaa, but that's not him. I think he played Ed. So, I was like, oh, and did you catch the Lion King reference?
You know, when I was watching it, I said, is that Lion King? But I don't remember what the hell it was about, though.
So it was towards the auction.
Oh, no, Pumbaa. Pumbaa the Warthog, yeah.
He did play him?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, that's what I thought. So, yeah, Timon and Pumbaa kind of had a reason.
Smart.
But, yeah, towards the auction, you know, he's greeting the guests, and Nathan Lane says, Matata to one of the guests.
Yes, that's what it was. Yes. only in the Nathan Lane-esque that he could do it in his Nathan Lane it. I can't describe it. Just his, oh.
Hakuna Matata.
The mouse trap scene, which I think this is fascinating, Rob, without any digital effects. Mm-hmm. 800 mouse traps were set and individually rigged.
I love how they have no money and yet they had enough to spend on this. All that food wasted. Like, I can't believe it. But this is sort of the writing that I enjoy, because they take pride and so much confidence that they're so smart, and yet it is revealed that they are just so out of tune. They just don't get it. And the fact that they're like, yeah, I'd like to use both half of my brains. And then they notice that they trap themselves in the kitchen. It's so hilarious. It's so good. But yeah, what a great scene. I love that.
Visually, the shots are fantastic in this movie. Mm-hmm. Really underrated.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, even with, you know, when the father went down the manhole and then you just get this overhead shot of them looking in and you're just seeing everybody kind of poke. I just, yeah, all of that was great.
There's that one point with the mouse. I wrote this down to see if you felt the same way. I think this movie is Home Alone if it took place with two brothers as the criminals and Kevin was a mouse.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Definite Home Alone. Definite Home Alone. It was when the fire broke out.
The chimney
him
scene.
Shooting out of the chimney, him getting shot into the glass, you know, like display, and they're both just mumbling to each other like, we've been through hell, our bodies are broken. Like, it's all, that was the Home Alone moment right there.
I'm so glad I wasn't losing my mind, because even the chimney when he's crawling up Nathan Lane, it sounded like the music was Home Alone inspired too, and I was just like, this is amazing.
So good. And I do want to also point out that the house in itself is its own character. It's a beautiful home. It's humongous. I mean, those set pieces were great, but just the damage that was done to it and just the maneuvering of everything, like even so much detail of within the walls, they did not have to do, but they did anyway. Any piece of garbage that the mouse brought into the holes, like all of that was just so deep. I don't know. I just thought, like, the house in itself is just great.
By the way, they fix up, like Rob is saying, this house is just gorgeous. Why for radical ones that don't know, they end up following the mouse who came back, like we said, from Cuba.
Built in 1876, the last LaRue known in existence. As my bidding,
did you see him? Yes, I thought so. Hey, the string. What? The string. Pop's lucky string. Son of a bitch ate it. Why didn't you tell me you saw him? I didn't believe this.
I told you you should have waited.
I'm sorry.
And they end up trying to flush the mouse out of the house.
Oh my God, I don't get it. They had it, 22 million.
God.
And they just could not leave the mouse alone. When you get the check, they are not getting a refund for finding a mouse in the house. Like,
exactly.
Just let it go.
Bye.
But again, I feel that it was just serendipitous because the father wanted them to be in the factory together.
Yes.
It just felt like it was all meant to just go back. But man, just that part alone, because they almost had it. They almost pulled it off. But what a scene, though, to have that monsoon come out. It just, everything about it was just so clever.
And the people at the auction and the water flooding everything. Visuals fantastic. So
What do you think about a movie like this? Do you think that kids should watch it? I mean, what kind of parent are we talking about? Is there somebody out there that you think would find this inappropriate? I mean, even with the wife in the lingerie, like, do you think this movie goes too far? I mean, this movie's PG. So do you think there are people out there that would find this inappropriate, or do you think kids can actually watch this, or would they want to watch something like this?
I would love to say, you know, in our retro world, kids would really like this, but I think it's only when the mouse is introduced, because honestly, I feel like this gritty 40s looking New York in the beginning in the rain is, I feel like that's our generation. And now they have like unicorns and rainbows in the sky. Like, I don't know, but there is those parents, right, that show their kids. This might have been their favorite movie and show them. If you grew up on this, I think you could get anything out of it. But honestly, Rob, I don't know. Like, the average kid,
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, what I was, 15, 16 when I watched this, but I you know, I like being entertained by stuff like this, so yes, it doesn't matter. I mean, it did the job for me, but as far as anyone younger, I wonder if this would be something that would appeal to them.
I mean, as my 13 in the movie theaters, I never sought it out again, but could that just have been at the time and there was so much other things happening? Because I would have probably would have liked to have watched this growing up probably more again.
I think it's also interesting too. I could have done more research on this. There was this phase in the 90s where we incorporated animals in all of our movies, right? Like we yes. wanted to see them at the center of whatever was going on, whether it's whales Everything. Or gorillas or monkeys or, you know, dogs, birds, right, like they right. always took center stage in the 90s. And we wanted that kind of stuff. Like that was the time where it was just like, we want animals in our movies. We want them to, we want them embedded into human drama and you know, and so that was always going to be a part of the story. And just having a mouse, a real mouse, to be like, it's just hilarious. I mean, that was the time. So I don't know, you know, we had our Dr. Doolittles in the 2000s, or was that 90s?
That was 90s. Congo, Doolittle,
Mighty Joe Young, all of that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. Mighty Joe, everything. You're right.
Yeah.
The animals, Tarzan, the cartoon.
But I don't know if we could be in that era anymore to where animals would be taken seriously in a film like this. I mean, if it's not Binks, they don't want to hear about it.
But the mouse as an animal person who could go, oh, over like the ugliest creature, people would say, mm-hmm. This mouse won me over.
Just with the nail gun scene, you know, his house, his little room gets destroyed. Oh. And then he's pinned against the wall with all the nails coming at him. You know that scene where it's just like...
And it literally scares the crap out of you. I mean, yeah. If you're not ready for it, and the mouse. Because it's shot so good as in the mouse's POV. I guess that's what you would say it. So good. So good.
Do you find that making the mouse sort of like human-like, or giving the mouse more of a cartoonish realism is a good or bad thing? What I mean is like, would you have preferred this more grounded and really have them dealing with a mouse who's just a mouse? Like,
I think if it was, I would have been bored. Probably.
Okay.
Not in the sense that like they were great at their comedy and their physical comedy, but I think it was because of the desperation, because there's no way, unless it was this intelligent mouse that we have, mm-hmm. that could have done half of this. So it had to be like this, I feel like. Maybe he didn't have to be as I'm sleeping in a bed kind of thing with a little sheet and a mattress, but I think you had to have some kind of level of this mouse being somewhat smarter than the average rat.
Yeah.
Bob's lucky string. I guess we got him. Yeah, I guess we did.
How would you have ended it as far as like winning? Like, was the mouse justified in the destruction of the house and making sure these two never got their fortune or just a way of living, to be honest with you? Or were we rooting for some kind of agreement or just the mouse just being gone?
Since I didn't remember how this ended, and by the way, it ends up back at the factory like the father wanted all along, and they're making balls of cheese.
Yeah, like string cheese in a way. It's giving Ratatouille, you know, they...
1,000%.
Yeah,
1,000%.
They decide to work with the mouse because the mouse gave them the brilliant idea of using their string factory to make cheese. Although I didn't know cheese was that durable to go
Never.
Through a machine like that.
But the same thing, unless it is rubber cheese. But I did want that. I honestly, at one point, I'm like, just live together. Live together. Just live and let him go amongst your business. Let you do what you do. But clearly he needs to survive because he earned his life. But that depends on how you look at this. Who's the villain? Like you said earlier, is it the brothers? Is it the mouse?
How is he locking these people in chest in the attic? That is just so diabolical. It just gives me chills that he took this exterminator from outside and then made it so he was in a chest. Like, that is creepy. How is he doing this?
and now he's working at a rush. He's going to serve people at a, with food now. Can you imagine the poison he could kill these people?
But I mean, what a testament to that time too, you know, just like with union and, you know, workers being underpaid, yes, you know, strikes and all of that, and just trying to make a buck, you know, like if you didn't have the money, you weren't a man, and all of these things kept coming into play. And also the story behind just the two of them just not being a family anymore was another subplot of the movie. Just these two could not get along, but it was also the fact that Nathan Lane, you know, just became bougie as a kid and just wanted better things in life. And, you know,
capers.
Yeah. So there was that little tie-in too. It was a nice little touch to this children's film.
Do you think at all, is this supposed to be a message about greed? Like we said earlier, the LaRue collector, is it greed? Is it supposed to teach us about being greedy? Or
I mean, that can definitely be one thing. I also think that it's not necessarily about having the riches that can make you happy, right? Like, I don't want to go into the money can't buy you happiness thing, because I think that's false.
I think so too. I think that's what rich people tell us.
But I just think that this idea of, I mean, there's definitely class, right? Like there's a dividend of class and what we think is worthy of attention and yada yada. And, you know, I just think the idea of just like what he said around Christmas time, it's about being grateful for what you have than what you don't, and stuff like that. So, you know, Nathan Lane's shooting for the stars. He has big dreams. He doesn't want to be what he considers low life, but it's also just accepting that even at that level of success is not right. A horrible thing. Think about it, work together. They bridge their two interests together, the food and legacy
came together and
made a thing. So that's kind of what I got as far as the message.
The father cursed them. This had to happen because the father all did this.
Oh yeah, the father sure did. Yeah, the portrait kept changing. Like, what the deuce, man? That was so funny.
That was really funny too. Of course, our miserable friend Robert Ebert gave the film 2 stars, calling it not very funny, and maybe couldn't have been very funny no matter what, because the pieces for comedy are not in place. A comedy that hasn't assigned sympathy to some of the characters and made others hateful cannot expect to get more laughs because the audience doesn't know who to laugh at or with.
We'll see. There you go.
But Gene Siskel said he disagreed and said he liked the film. At least that is 2 different opinions.
I think Ebert definitely has a point. It was hard to really figure out who we were rooting for. I mean, it was obviously just to get to the end and have that sort of connection and you know, agreement with one another. But at the same time, comedy is subjective. And, you know, some people might find this a little too silly to take seriously in a way of just like good comedy, right? Like a lot of people don't really appreciate, like, just take Rat Race. I mean, that movie was nothing but physical comedy. People would never act like that in real life. And so are we supposed to laugh at this stuff because it's not based on anything real? And it sounds like that's what he was saying. I could be wrong, but that's what I got from his review. And so I can understand that. It's a little subjective. And I think that if you can just appreciate just wacky comedy, like, you know, Wacky Racers or anything like just
wacky
enjoy
racers,
it. Just to kind of enjoy it for the slapstick that it is. I mean, I got very Looney Tunes vibe from this. This is very Wile E. Coyote, you know, Bugs Bunny, Elmer Fudd sort of deal. And it's just kind of watching that back and forth, pun intended, cat and mouse sort of mentality. So I thought it was great.
I totally agree. This was truly a pleasant surprise. The fact that I didn't remember anything besides the string and the factory and all that was really a delight, because honestly, I had no idea if this rat, a mouse, was gonna live. I mean, I had a feeling. I was like, you can't kill him now. I really like this. And I do feel that it is almost not for people like Rob, who have watched it over the years and, you know, really enjoyed it for what it was back then. But I feel like this is forgotten by a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody who would remember would have like a twinkle of a memory and just be like, I remember appreciating it when it was out. And I think that's enough. This is a movie I would definitely repeat. I always enjoy this movie. I just think it's so funny. As far as recommendation, you know, like, I think there is an audience for this. Yeah. It's just, I don't know the urgency on anyone wanting to watch this, but I just think that this is why I always love the 90s. as far as filmmaking, because they literally just took out a gumball machine and whatever the gum said, and they just did it. It didn't matter.
So true.
They could make a story out of anything. These are a lot of like what if scenarios, and they managed to pull a story out of just two people wanting to get rid of a mouse out of their home. I just adding all of the destruction is just, and chaos was just icing. It was just icing.
And you need that, I feel like, for the movie to work, like the over the topness and everything like that. And it goes pretty quickly too. It feels like a fast movie. So I would say if you want holiday feels like warming up to Christmas, Thanksgiving time, I think this is perfect.
This could fit, actually. Yeah, I would agree with that.
So you mentioned recommending this film to others, Rob. On the other hand, if they didn't, or if they did, do you got any recommendations for us?
Rob's recommendations.
I definitely do. There were a lot of films that were sort of targeted for this type of audience, this type of, you know, comedy. And I did pull up some, but, you know, some of these movies you've definitely seen. So I don't think this will be too hard. But if you did enjoy Mouse Hunt, and this is a movie that we will be reviewing next year, this movie is Baby's Day Out. Baby's Day Out is sort of in the same vein as I was mentioning earlier, the Rube Goldberg effect. And there's just a lot of environment that just works in a way of drawing the story and just continuing the physical comedy. Everything is connected. It's all about timing. And I think just the choreography of this movie, which also involves three bumbling criminals after a small little baby, works for a children's film. It just works. And I love Baby's Day Out. I mentioned this so many times and people have never heard of it. And I'm like,
they never heard of it.
They either never heard of it or they didn't like it. Some people just really did not like this movie. And I'm just like, I'm going to review it. You're going to listen to what I have to say. And hopefully it'll change your mind. This movie is genius. I love it for a kid's film, Baby's Day Out. The next one I'm going to recommend, I think has its sort of dark comedy humor. It's a little morbid. It's also, you know, very slapstick and involves like really quirky, zany characters. Also, the house is another character in itself in this film. I'm going to recommend Casper.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, with the uncles, the talk of death throughout the whole movie, it's dark humor. You know, there's an exterminator sort of like tie-in with
in the
movie. I just think this movie fits the bill if you want to keep the same sort of. So this is definitely like movie marathon. Let's watch similar stuff. Casper is the way to go. Now, this last one, this was not as successful. I don't know if there's an audience for this, but I feel like if Mouse Hunt worked for you, that this movie deserves another watch. Mr. Magoo with Leslie Nielsen.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Mr. Magoo is a live action adaptation to a very older cartoon where this man is just senile and blind as a bat, but manages to keep himself alive and functioning because the city works in his favor.
Always.
This is very Baby's Day Out as well. Just everything works. No matter if he can see or not, he is just lucky. He never like falls or bump into thing. Everything just works for him. And it's that choreography and the set pieces that make this movie stand out. But again, this movie was not a success, unfortunately, but I just love the idea of it. And it's very similar to Mouse Hunt. So I would definitely check that out.
I used to love the cartoon where he doesn't even recognize people either. He always thinks everyone is somebody else. It's so funny.
Yeah, yeah. So if you did not like Mouse Hunt, these recommendations are sort of rounded more in realism, maybe even a little serious. They're not as childlike for them, but I think it still keeps the same silliness, but for adults. The first one I'm going to mention is Tom Hanks and Shelley Long. This is The Money Pit.
I have not seen this.
The Money Pit, I believe, is 80s, and they both do you know what a money pit is? So money pit is a term used when you buy a specific property or product that on the outside looks great, or if you invest in something that you feel that could make you a lot of money, you're basically pouring more money in into something that you will never see profit in. So these two decide to buy this house that the realtor is a real dirty schemer. Like, this realtor hid everything from this couple and presented this house to be pristine, up to code, everything is perfect. And they were duped into buying this house. And the very moment they move in, everything you can think of that can be wrong with a house happens in this movie. This house takes on a life of its own. Everything that they try and do to make it hospitable breaks down on them, changes. Any attempts to fix it gets even worse. That's what a money pit. You're just throwing money in a pit and you'll never see it again. And that's what this movie is. And so it's a physical comedy, and these two are a couple who bought a house that clearly is just broke. Did you look up the poster?
I just looked up the poster. Yeah. I love it.
This would be a good movie to review on your show. I think people would appreciate it. It's very Burbs in a way too. And the way the house was getting destroyed throughout the movie, this movie fits. The next film I'm going to recommend, if you did not like Mouse Hunt, I would suggest watching See No Evil, Hear No Evil. This is a buddy comedy slapstick movie starring Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder, who, like Laurel and Hardy, Abbott Costello, Lee Evans, and Nathan Lane, this is the duo of the 80s. These two worked so well together and have so many films under their belt. But in this particular movie, these two happen to witness a murder. And so they're sort of on the run. But at the same time, the cops think that they did it. What makes this even more wackier is the fact that Richard Pryor is blind and Gene Wilder is deaf. But they manage to use their other senses and work together in order to stay alive. And just some of the hijinks that these two get into, because one can't see and one can't hear. How do you even communicate? But they make it work, and the comedy is top shelf. It is top shelf.
I feel like another movie they would never do again. It was so good. Yes.
I mean, if you just watch the trailer, you'll get a complete idea as to why this probably uses some of that physical comedy and use it in a more realistic way, somewhat. In the last film, I could go either way. It was sort of a tie. I chose Matilda and Willy Wonka.
Ooh, okay, yes.
And yeah, these movies is because of its dark adult imagery. I dare say horror and also very sadistic and sad way of living. I mean, Matilda is childlike as it is. This is some dark stuff. They talk about some heavy themes in Matilda.
Sure,
and
too.
I think Willy Wonka will always go down as one of the scariest children movies you will ever
psychotic
watch. It is psychotic. Yes. So I would say either one of those works better than Mouse Hunt, but you still get that same black comedy in the two titles. Honorary mentions of Dunstan Checks In and the Final Destination movies that I mentioned before. And that's again more tied to the Rube Goldberg sort of effect. I think just having to deal with the destination and just having zany things happen within its interior is just insane. I also wanted to, you know, do some films that have inspired me to watch in addition to Mouse Hunt. And it is the Abbott Costello, Laurel Hardy stuff. I've never seen any of their stuff.
Oh, especially with the monsters.
Yeah, I think going sort of down that path might be kind of fun. You know, these movies were what, 50s, 20s? Like, one of them was like silent films, then the others were talkies.
Yes, yes. But still all black and white.
Yeah.
The granddaddies or whatever
exactly.
You would say.
So yeah, I would say any one of those in those series of films I think might be a really nice watch. But I also put The Borrowers with John Goodman. I've never seen that. And I think the 40s, you know, like fall, autumn color vibe that you see throughout this movie, just think of the string factory in itself. It reminds me of The Borrowers, but I don't have memory of this. I can't remember if I've seen it.
Oh, with the little things.
With the little people, exactly.
Yes! Oh yeah. My god, forgot all about this, Rob. Holy
but yeah,
crap.
I think John Goodman is given a house and he finds that this family isn't happening. It's the literal same plot. So I would say Borrowers is something that could be fun to watch.
Little people, big trouble. Yes, yes, yes. All fantastic recommendations. Wow. With that being said, Radical Ones, another episode down. We've had some delays in Thundercats. We were supposed to have a special guest on for our next episode. Unfortunately, he had a medical emergency, so we're still trying to catch up. But in 2 weeks, Rob is back, David's here, and we are doing Scrooge together, which is a favorite of Rob's.
I cannot wait. This is seriously top three Christmas movies of all time. I don't care what anyone says. You ask me what Christmas movie you want to watch. It's not Home Alone. It's not The Santa Claus. It is Scrooge. It is Scrooge, damn it. Muppet's Christmas Carol? No. Get that away from me. It is Scrooge. That is my Christmas Carol.
That's your version. That is it.
I love Scrooge so much, so I am so excited.
Yeah, and then we have a Thundercats, like, hopefully again, and a break, Radical Ones, but thank you so much. If you have time this month, it is busy, but we're still looking for reviews on Apple. It would help the show greatly. We hit our 20 milestone in the summer, and it's been quiet ever since. Rob, where can the lovely people find you?
I do have an additional page on Instagram. It's Rob the Movie Geek. I sometimes will share my recommendations from the show as well as others on that page. Rob the Movie Geek, all one word.
And that will be in the description box, as well as the Radical Retro Rewind podcast, one word, on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and beyond. Thank you so much, Rob, for bringing back a movie and memories that I had lost to time. Truly lost, gone.
That's my job.
We will see you again, Radical Ones. Until next time, stay radical and goodbye.
Bye.